Welcome back to another deep dive. Today, we're looking at a topic that I think a lot of us think we know, but the data, well, the data suggests otherwise. We're talking about hazardous energy. And I don't mean something, you know, sci-fi like nuclear waste. I'm talking about the invisible forces inside the machinery that powers our entire manufacturing world.
It's one of those topics that feels completely routine right up until the moment it isn't.
Yeah.
We're looking at a collection of shop topics today, specifically issue 004, which is all about lockout to gout. And frankly, this is a subject where I think familiarity can breed contempt. People hear low toe and their eyes just glaze over.
Oh, totally. They've seen the safety videos a dozen times. They know the acronym.
They know the acronym, but that's the real puzzle.
Exactly. If everyone knows it, if it's Industry 101, then why is it consistently one of the deadliest blind spots on the floor? The source material we have today, it isn't just a how-to, it's really a breakdown of operational integrity.
That's a great way to put it, too.
It just highlights this huge gap between what we think is happening and the actual physics of what happens when something goes wrong.
That is the perfect frame for it, operational integrity. Because lockout of gout, at its heart, isn't about, you know, fumbling with a padlock to avoid a fine. It's a life support system.
Right.
It is the only thing standing between a human being and the raw, unthinking power of industrial physics. The guide makes this compelling case that we have to stop seeing this as just compliance. We need to see it as controlling chaos.
Okay, so let's start with the numbers because they paint a really confusing picture. The OSHA statistics in this report are just stark.
They really are.
On one hand, effective Valota procedures prevent, what, an estimated 120 fatalities and something like 50,000 injuries every single year in the U.S. alone.
Right. So it works. When the system is actually used, it works perfectly.
But then you flip the page and you see all auto violations are consistently in the top 10 most cited OSHA standards year after year. So help me make sense of this. We have a system we know saves lives, yet it's one of the most botched protocols out there. Is it just pressure, people trying to save 5 minutes?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? And the source material digs into this. It's almost never as simple as the worker was lazy. That's a convenient story, but it's usually wrong.
Yeah.
The root causes are almost always systemic. I mean, sure, rushing is a part of it. We all know the pressure to keep those OEE scores up. But the guide points to things like missing procedures.
You mean just literally not having a plan for a specific machine?
Exactly. Imagine a tech walking up to some complex custom-built machine. If there isn't a documented machine-specific procedure showing them exactly where every isolation point is, what are they doing? They're guessing.
And guessing is fatal.
Guessing is fatal in this line of work, or it's inadequate training. Someone might know how to lock a switch, but they don't understand why they also need to bleed the hydraulic accumulator.
So it's not malice, it's a failure of the support structure around them.
It's a failure to set the stage. The governing rule here, 29 CFR 1910.147, it's not a suggestion box, it is federal law. It demands a written program, it demands periodic inspections, and it demands training. If your culture values production speed over the 15 minutes it takes to do a proper lockout, well, that's not a worker failure, that's a leadership failure.
That brings us to the actual hardware. The guide makes this distinction that I think gets lost sometimes, the difference between lockout and tagout. To me, they always seem like a package deal. And they usually are, but they do very different things.
And they do. And the difference is critical. Think of lockout as the physical reality. This is the hardware, the padlock, the valve cover, the clamp on the breaker. Its job is to make the machine physically impossible to operate.
Okay.
And the source text really emphasizes these things have to be durable, they have to be standardized, and they have to be substantial. You can't just use a zip tie.
The standardization part was interesting. Why does it matter if all the locks look the same?
It's about creating a visual language. If you walk onto a factory floor and see a red lock, you should know instantly that's an electrical isolation. A blue lock, that's mechanical.
Ah, okay.
Or maybe red is maintenance and yellow is a contractor. It just cuts through the noise. If everyone's using their own random lock from the hardware store, you lose that instant life-saving recognition.
And then there's tagout. The guide calls it the warning indicator.
Right. The lock stops the hand. The tag is supposed to stop the mind. It's a communication device. It tells you who is working on it, when they started, why. But, and this is so important, a tag gives you zero physical protection. If you only use a tag, you are literally betting your life that every other person in that building is paying attention.
Which is a perfect segue into the human element. The guide breaks down personnel into three tiers: authorized, affected, and other. And I feel like the friction between those first two groups is where things can go wrong.
Oh, absolutely. That's the classic tension point. The authorized employee is the one holding the key. They're the maintenance tech, the one servicing the machine. They have the training.
And the affected employee is the operator, the person who runs it.
Exactly. The person whose job it is to meet a quota. So now the machine goes down. The operator is frustrated. They want it back up. The tech needs to shut it down completely. The operator might say, hey, just reach in and tweak it. Don't kill the power. It takes 20 minutes to reboot.
That's that production pressure we were just talking about.
That's it right there. And the third group, other employees, you know, office staff, janitors, they just need to know one rule. You see a lock, you don't touch it. Ever. Don't try to be helpful. Stay away.
Let's get into the physics here, because this is where the deep dive really, really gets interesting. I think for most of us, when we hear energy source, we think electricity. We think, I pulled the plug, so the machine is dead.
And that is the single most dangerous assumption you can make in an industrial setting. Unplugged does not mean safe.
The guide lists five distinct types of hazardous energy. Electrical is number one, obviously. But let's talk about the others, the ones that hide. Hydraulic and pneumatic. So, fluids and air. Explain the danger after the power's cut.
Okay, so imagine a hydraulic press. It uses oil under thousands of pounds of pressure to stamp metal. You turn off the electrical motor that runs the pump. Everything goes silent. You think it's safe.
Right.
But the system might have what's called an accumulator. It's basically a storage battery for pressure. Or a check valve could be holding all that pressure in the line.
So the line is still live, even with the motor off.
It's a loaded gun. If you crack a fitting to change a hose, that oil can spray out at thousands of PSI. It can literally inject into your skin. Or, even worse, the ram could drop instantly because you just removed the one thing holding it up.
Wow.
Same thing with pneumatics. Compressed air can make a hose whip around with enough force to break your arm.
Then you've got thermal energy. This one feels a little more obvious. Don't touch a hot stove. But I guess the scale is just different.
It's the scale and the retention. We're talking about massive industrial ovens or chemical reactors. They have thermal mass. They can stay dangerously hot for hours after you flip the switch.
Right.
And the same goes for cryogenic hazards on the cold side. It's not just, is it running? It's, is the environment itself hostile?
Okay, chemical energy is another one. This isn't about moving parts. It's about what's in the pipes.
Exactly. If you're replacing a valve on an acid line, the pressure might be zero. But if you open it up and there's liquid just trapped in a bend, gravity does the rest.
But the one that I found most chilling, the one that really makes you visualize the machine differently, is stored mechanical energy.
This is the silent killer. This is the one that catches even experienced people off guard. We're talking about potential energy just waiting to become kinetic.
So give us an example. Where does this hide?
Springs. That's the classic one. A giant spring in a braking mechanism. It's compressed tight. The machine is off. But that spring is still pushing with hundreds of pounds of force.
Yep.
Undo the latch holding it, and it expands instantly. Mm. Or flywheels.
Oh, yeah.
Heavy spinning wheels that maintain momentum. You cut the power, but that flywheel keeps spinning silently for 10 minutes. You touch it, it'll take your arm off.
And you mentioned gravity, just simple gravity.
Never, ever underestimate gravity. A robotic arm is holding a 50-pound part. The power cuts. What's holding it up? If the answer is hydraulic pressure, and that pressure slowly bleeds off, that arm is coming down. If your hand is in there, that's it.
This leads us right into the case studies in the guide. And I want to spend some time here because reading these, it's heavy. These aren't just numbers. These are moments where the physics won.
They're hard to read, but they're necessary. They show exactly what happens when you overlook one of these energy sources.
Let's start with the Ohio Meat Processing Facility from 2023. This was a chemical energy failure.
It was a horrific incident. An employee was doing maintenance near a curing vat. And the failure here was, it was total. There was no effective LOTO procedure to isolate that area. The worker fell into the vat.
Into the chemicals.
Suffered severe chemical burns. And the tragedy is, this was a completely preventable administrative failure. OSHA fined them almost $300,000, but the money is irrelevant. They simply failed to identify an open vat as a hazardous energy source that needed to be guarded during maintenance.
Wow. The second case, the conveyor jam, is something I think a lot of us can picture.
This is the classic stored mechanical energy trap. A conveyor jams, a box gets stuck. The motor stalls, the operator hits the stop button. Now, here's a critical moment.
Okay.
The motor is off. The belt is stopped. But because of that jam, the belt is stretched tight. It's under immense tension.
Like a giant rubber band pulled back as far as it can go.
Exactly that.
Yeah.
The worker reaches in to pry the bobs loose. The second that jam is cleared, all that tension releases. The belt snaps forward, maybe only a couple of feet, but with the force of the entire drive system behind it.
And worker was crushed.
Crushed. They treated stopped as safe, and they completely forgot that tension is energy.
That's terrifying. Just the snapback. The third case was an arc flash in 2019. This one sounds like it was about complexity.
It was. This was a situation where the technician actually did apply a lockout. No. He locked the main 480-volt disconnect. He thought he was safe.
But he wasn't.
But modern machines are ecosystems. This piece of equipment had a secondary power source, probably a 120-volt control circuit, that wasn't identified on the procedure.
So he locked the front door, but left the back window wide open.
And when his tool touched a component, that secondary source arced, third-degree burns. It just highlights why you can't assume the big switch kills everything. You have to know the schematic.
So we know the problem. We know the physics. How do we fix it? The guide has these five best practices, but I want to look at them through the lens of, you know, actually making them happen.
Right. Let's start with step one, machine-specific procedures. This is the antidote to that lazy culture.
Yeah.
You cannot have a generic binder that just says turn off breaker. That is useless.
You need a map.
You need a visual map for every single asset. For machine 42, lock breaker A in panel 3, close valve B under the catwalk, and block flywheel C with a pin. If you don't have that detail, you're asking your employees to guess. And even the best employees get tired. They get distracted. The procedure is a checklist that saves them from their own memory.
Okay, steps 2 and 3 are hardware and training. We've touched on that. But I want to focus on step 4. You mark this as the critical step. Verify isolation.
This is what separates the pros from the amateurs. It's often called the tryout.
The try and lock tag try.
Exactly. You've applied the locks, you've drained the pressure, you've blocked the moving parts. Now, you try to start the machine.
That feels so counterintuitive. You just turned it off.
Do it anyway. Stand clear and push the big green button. Watch the gauges. Listen for a hum. If that machine stays dead, then and only then do you know you have achieved a zero energy state.
Okay.
If you skip this step, you are gambling. It's like clearing a firearm. You drop the magazine, but you always check the chamber. Verification is checking the chamber.
That is a powerful image. Okay, finally, let's just do a quick walkthrough of the checklist just to visualize it. If I'm standing there ready to work, what's the mental flow?
It starts before you touch a single lock. Phase one is notification. You have to tell the operators what you're doing. Hey, line 4 is going down for an hour.
Communication first.
If you don't, they might try to reset a breaker because they think it just tripped.
Got it. Then shut down.
Shut down with normal controls. Then isolation, flipping the breakers, closing the valves. Then you apply your locks and tags.
Then the stored energy check.
This is the hunt. You're looking for those hidden enemies. Bleed the air. Block the press. Release the spring tension.
Then verification. Push the button.
Push the button. And only then do you start the work. But there's one more phase the checklist covers that often gets botched. Restoration.
Putting it all back online.
You're done. You're tired. You want to go home. But you have to reverse the process just as carefully. Remove your tools. Make sure you didn't leave a wrench in the gearbox.
Oh.
Replace the guards. Clear personnel. And here is the golden rule of Elto. Only the person who put the lock on can take it off.
So if Bob puts his lock on at 8 a.m. and he goes home sick, Steve can't just come by with bolt cutters.
Absolutely not. If you cut that lock, you are violating the most sacred rule of the shop floor. Because for all you know, Bob is still inside the machine. Or Bob knows something about the wiring that Steve doesn't. Cutting a lock is a huge deal. It requires a specific high-level procedure to verify that employee isn't even in the building.
It sounds like the whole system is designed to, well, to slow us down, to force a pause.
It is. It's an engineered pause. It forces you to stop and acknowledge the reality of the machine in front of you.
So as we wrap this up, what's the big takeaway? Most of us aren't factory workers, but this idea of operational integrity feels like it applies to more than just industrial safety.
It does. At the end of the day, it's about respect. Respect for the magnitude of the forces we work with. Whether you're managing a massive assembly line or, you know, just working on a project, the lesson is that shortcuts are an illusion. A strong LOTO program is a sign of a mature professional culture. It says, we value our people more than the next 5 minutes of production.
I want to leave the listeners with a thought, something that stuck with me from our talk about stored energy. You know, the spring under tension, the weight waiting to fall. It makes me wonder about the stored energy in our own lives or our workflows.
That's an interesting pivot.
I mean, think about it. What are the invisible forces? The stress we haven't dealt with, the conflict in a team that's just simmering, the steps we skipped in a project plan that are just sitting there under tension. We think everything is off and calm, but that energy is stored, just waiting for something to clear the jam so it can snap back.
That's a powerful metaphor. Identifying your own isolation points, where you need to block that risk or that negativity, is just as important in life as it is in mechanics.
Something to think about next time you see a padlock. Stay safe, verify your isolation points, and respect the physics. We'll see you on the next deep dive.
Stay safe, everyone.